A good day, everybody. Welcome in to Mining Stock Daily. We have a corporate editorial with one of our sponsors. Joining us from the beautiful town of London is CEO Frederick Bell of Elemental Royalties. Fred, good to join you. How you been?
Very good. Great to be on the show again. Thanks, Trevor.
Yeah, we always appreciate your time you give us. This is an interesting day here, Fred. Given the gold market, gold's actually catching a pretty strong bid. It is up north of $35, closing in on that 200-day moving average, which sits at right at $1,800, currently trading $1,796. So big, strong bid in gold. This is coming off of a little bit hotter than anticipated CPI and inflation numbers here in the United States. However, I think it is important that that term transitory is obviously continues to be challenged in the data. We'll support that challenge here and then. So, you know, give us, you know, your sit back and give us your gold market commentary here, Fred.
I think that I definitely think some of the inflation is transitory. And I think that there is we're seeing that over in the UK and Europe as well. But I also think once that cycle starts, it's actually very hard to sort of get out of it. And I think that the governments are going to have a problem because they've been so accommodating on economic monetary policy. They have been so supportive in so many areas, housing, economy, jobs, that it's actually it's going to be hard to put interest rates back up. And so, again, I think that's going to be supportive of an inflationary environment. And I only need to talk to the sort of generation before me, my parents, and they can remember interest rates in the 15 to 20% on mortgages and houses in London. So it's something that we haven't had to deal with much in the last, certainly not the last decade. And, you know, even going to 2000, not in a huge way, but it makes a big difference. And I think it's very easy to sneak up on you. So I think it will continue to be supportive of gold on a general level. I think it will be harder than people think to remove some of that support from the economy.
And you know, you're based in London. You were back in Canada doing some business here in the last few weeks, but you're back home. And during that time, and this is maybe fairly anecdotal, but we did hear news out of the UK about energy squeezes, long lines for fuel for vehicles at the gas stations. You know, were you seeing this at all when you were on the ground? You know, what was the sentiment there for one's, you know, kind of standard of living and the energy needed for that?
Well, that's a really interesting point, because gas prices have more than doubled. And anecdotally, talking to some in the oil and gas industry who are traders, it's actually been really difficult for some of those companies, because they've been getting margin calls when the gas price has rocketed, not by 0.5% or 1%, but 200% in a few days, sort of unprecedented. It's the government's just, I think, shortly going to step in with some support measures for industry, because energy intensive industries like the steel industry, car industry, you know, the gas price rise makes a huge impact. And gas is, particularly in the UK, more so in Europe, gas is used in most central heating, and is a larger component of the energy sector. And partly historical reasons, the North Sea meant that we usually had a very good supply of gas, but it's been a cold winter in other parts of the world, and gas supplies haven't been restocked as much. And now coming in, there's a shortage all across Europe, and it's pushed up the prices so much that a large number of the smaller, newer, sort of a lot of them sold themselves on green credential energy suppliers have actually gone bust in the UK in the past 2 or 3 weeks. So they are saying that energy prices will, utilities, gas and energy, will have to go up next year, and probably £200 to £300 for the average family. And when you think that the government just put up national insurance, which is basically a form of income tax, but companies pay some of it. They just put that up by 1% a month or two ago. And so that is, you know, again, it's sort of £300 sort of average salary is the cost on that. So you suddenly look at it and going into next year, before the government's even started removing a lot of the support for the economy, you've got tax going up by £300 a year for the average family. You've got gas electricity bills going up by £200 to £300 a year for the average family. And some of these things, gas and electricity, they lock in a sort of long-term price. So it's not that it will be there for a month or two and fall away. If they put it in place, it will then be a fixed sort of cap for the year. So that in itself is a pretty significant jump in those two areas that households are going to have to deal with in the UK next year.
It was interesting. I know this is a little bit, this is all anecdotal, but, you know, but part of me is just curious about the fear psychology of inflation, if that has hit the UK, because, you know, Fred, I was just in Sweden, spent the past weekend in Stockholm, and they had just lifted COVID restrictions. And I tell you what, from what I saw in downtown Stockholm, it was a raging party. So many people were out willing to spend money to go out the nightlife, you know, and like I hadn't experienced something like that in a big citywide scene for quite some time. And so it's, you know, those people obviously weren't saving their money because they were concerned about higher gas prices. They were just happy to get out of there. You know, what are you seeing in London? Is there a fear of inflation sitting in London yet? Or is that still maybe not really poking its head out?
I would say that there is, among the more financially potentially knowledgeable, maybe those in the finance industry, and to some extent you're seeing it in housing. House prices have gone up maybe 8% over the last year, which is unbelievable given, I mean, I say it's unbelievable as a 35-year-old looking to buy a house and seeing where house price to salaries are versus where they sat 30 years ago. It's partly that is partly people saying if inflation's coming, maybe housing is a good place to put your money. And in the UK, you don't get capital gains tax on your primary property. So, you know, to some extent, it's almost good to take a mortgage at 1% and sort of upgrade your house, because if inflation comes and house prices increase by 5% a year for a couple of years, and you've got some leverage there with the bank loan, you'll actually do pretty well, and any gains you make on it won't be subject to capital gains tax. I think it's there's definitely some there's signs of inflation for sure in multiple areas, and the question is how long will it last, and is it something that is going to increase and then fall away, or is some of this going to be there? And it's a sort of, you know, inflation tends to feed inflation. Once you get into it, it's very hard to get out. So I think the governments don't mind a bit of inflation to eat away debts. So as long as it's manageable and controllable, 2-3% inflation is pretty good thing for governments.
Manageable and controllable, or we'll see how that plays out. Fred, we should probably get to business from Elemental, because there's a couple key updates that you published here recently. Earlier this week, you did share the results from Carla Winda, which is a key royalty asset within the Elemental portfolio. That really continues to produce, you know, good solid ounces. Just under 25,000 ounces of gold from Carla Winda was produced in Q3. So, you know, good steady revenue for Elemental. Give us your corporate update here from this royalty, and how it continues to be. It really is your premier asset.
Yes, and this is actually it's just reached steady state production. So they had first gold pour on the 30th of June, and they announced that they had steady state production by the end of September. So as one of the brokers in Australia commented, this is one of the smoothest ramp ups in memory of a mine in Australia, And given that it's happening under COVID and with all the sort of accompanying issues, I think even more impressive. And the reason for that is because the management team at Capricorn, and this is a 800 million Aussie dollar market cap company with a 125,000 ounce year mine. And the reason they have a premium valuation is because they have a really, really impressive track record in Australia. They have taken two companies they have built from the ground up really into multi-billion dollar gold mining companies. And the exec chairman, Mark Clark, they left Regis Resources and came into Capricorn to have Carla Winder as the centerpiece of the new company and build it out around it. And so we have a 2% royalty life of mine on that. And I think what's really encouraging is that not only did they build and commission the mine on time, but to then be able to get steady state production in 3 months from first gold pour, it's really impressive. And they are they're coming into I think sort of the main part of the ore body, and it's a 10-year plus reserve life, so it's a big open pit. But as they come into the main part of it, the grade picks up a bit, and they've been outperforming on a number of metrics. So actually, I think there's a pretty good sign that they could be outperforming their long-term guidance here. And when you look at their track record, you know, at Regis, they built three mines in 5 years, and all three of those mines ended up producing 30 to 50% more than the original nameplate capacity. So if you look at, you know, Carla Winder and say 120,000 ounces, you can have a view on what they will be able to do with it, but they certainly have the proven ability and track record, and that's why it's a key royalty for us, because as it stands today, it's paying us $4 to $4.5 million US a year for the next decade. There's huge scope to increase the resource. When you build a mine, typically you build it with a view to getting credit from the bank, getting a visible 10-year mine plan. And beyond that, you typically don't really add a lot to it, because it doesn't necessarily help you. And I think from their position, get the mine going, build it, commercial production, and then you can start looking at exploration opportunities, expansion opportunities, a whole spectrum. So I think for us, having a royalty of that caliber coming on and taking us to, in 2022, we should be 10 million US gross revenue. To have that for a 92 million US dollar enterprise value company in the royalty space it's the best value that there is. We are as diversified as a mid-tier miner. We will be getting credit facilities, refinancing our Sprott credit facility with some of the mid-tier banks in Canada. So I anticipate we'll be able to have a credit facility sort of 5% cost of capital, which again, for 100 million market cap company, is extremely, extremely unusual, and will be free cash flowing in a material way. And we have been from the outset, but really starting to see some material revenue coming in. And I think that the value in this, it's really highlighted by one of our other royalties, Wang Yon, that had an announcement last week. And Wang Yon is a 175,000 ounce year mine, so big mine run by Endeavour Mining, top 10 gold miner globally, and another cornerstone asset for us. And they have announced exploration target on our royalty of 1.5 to 2 million ounces by the end of 2025. And they are planning to mine 750,000 ounces there by the end of 2025. So they're looking to not just replace what they're mining, but actually add the same again in additional resources. And if that's the case, the Wang Yon royalty pays us roughly 2.5 million US a year. We will get paid that to the end of 2025, and then the royalty will be worth more than it is today, all other things being equal. And that's the great benefit with the royalty company, because we're not paying for any of the exploration. We are free carried on everything they do. And so when you get great operators with great assets, you get all of that optionality embedded in, and that's why the royalty model has been successful. And I think it's our unique selling point is that with Carla Winder coming on to commercial production, we are 80% by NAV producing royalties, which you do not get outside the likes of Franco Nevada, Wheaton, and Royal Gold. And to have that in a junior royalty company our size, I think is pretty unique. So yeah, some really good updates across the portfolio. Allen Carr, another royalty, just announced that they'll have a reserve and resource update in Q1 next year. So great to be able to start putting some numbers and figures around what the value of those additional ounces and resources being added are. Because for Endeavour, you know, for example, that expiration target is US 15 to 30 million in attributable revenue to Elemental. And we're a 92 million market cap company at the moment with 10 million of revenue next year. So I think that's really helpful because it starts to highlight the huge upside that you get on some of these high quality producing mines. And I don't think anyone looks at the operators and goes, that mine will only be producing for 10 years. They look at the operator and go, great that they've got 10 years. Now, how much can they expand it? How big can they make it? And that's really where we get the benefit.
Yeah, two very important updates for Elemental. I mean, it's interesting when you kind of looking back at Wagnon with Endeavour. So they currently have just over 2 million ounces. They're looking to add up to another 2 million ounces. And you have royalty on the entire project there. So we will see how this pans out. And I'm sure you do a pretty good job of keeping your shareholders and the news kind of updated on discoveries and exploration updates from the projects that you have royalties on. So we'll keep watching the tape here and you know, you don't have to just watch news specifically from the operators, but if Elemental does have a royalty on those projects, you have been doing a great job of keeping the shareholders abreast through news releases as well, you know, passively. Fred, I do want to quickly, before we get things wrapped up, my last question for you is really the competitiveness of the royalty space. We've seen a lot of pretty big deals taking place within the royalties and the royalty companies here throughout the industry.
Yes.
You know, can you kind of give us your thoughts on, like, how competitive is this space getting right now for royalties, and why now?
Well, I think it's the main driver is that in a sort of consolidating gold market, where it's not a rampant bull market at the moment, but neither is it a sort of, you know, really bearish market. You might say it's been a sort of consolidating trend in the gold price, and a number of companies have come off. I think that is often an opportunity historically in the space for people to look at consolidation. And in the royalty space, we've seen probably over, you know, nearly $500 million of sort of M&A acquisitions, two deals in the last 4 months. And likely to be more over the next year or so, because it is relatively easy to add value in the royalty space when you do M&A. To give you an example, if you're a miner in Australia and you buy a mine in West Africa, it doesn't necessarily add any synergy. You have different management team, different legal, different different time zones. Whereas with a royalty company, because you don't operate any assets, that diversification is your greatest strength. And so actually M&A makes a lot more sense on the whole in the royalty space, mixing the assets, than it does in others. So that always helps, because there is a rational argument to it. And there's also been, I think, a trend towards people saying recently that, scale matters. And if you get up to a certain size in market cap, you get included in the GDXJ index or the senior GDX index, and that automatically adds a lot of liquidity, adds profile, it opens up the doors to certain funds. So I think that there is also the rationale that, hey, if we put these two companies together, the sum of the parts will be greater, not just on an asset level, but it will be greater in terms of liquidity and access to bigger shareholders. And so I think that's sort of partly what's driving it. But I mean, I would say that with an Elemental hat on, there is not another royalty company in our sort of, with our profile of royalties, because the holy grail in the space is producing high quality royalties. And the first thing someone looks at when they look at a royalty opportunity, is it a good quality mine? And then how close is it to production? And if our portfolio is 80% good quality producing assets, it puts us in a pretty unique position. I think it's trading at the valuation we are. There is a long, long way we can go to add value to the company through organic growth and through our biggest royalties coming on. And this quarter will be our best quarter, and next quarter will be our best after that. So I think it will start to come through in the financials. But yeah, expect to see probably some more M&A in the royalty space over the next year or so.
Fred, appreciate your time. It looks like hopefully you and I will be able to catch up in December this winter, hopefully in person. But until then, thanks for your update, and maybe we'll be able to touch base, you know, again next month in November and see how things are playing out. By the way, everybody, Fred's a brand new dad, so congratulations, buddy. Happy for you.
Cheers, Trevor. I'm glad this is audio and you can't see the bags under my eyes.
I have been there, and I know exactly what you're talking about, my friend. All right, that's Fred Bell, CEO of Elemental Royalties, trading on the TSX Venture with ELE and on the OTCQX with ELEMF. The information presented should not be considered investment advice. Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak to a licensed financial representative before making any investment decisions.